News starts right now.
Night and early today, at my direction, the United States Armed Forces conducted an extraordinary military operation in the capital of Venezuela, overwhelming American military power, air, land, and sea was used to launch a spectacular assault, and it was an assault like people have not seen since World War II.
So, anything happened over the weekend? Did John? There was football.
Yeah, there was football all weekend.
Navy won against the 14th string from.
Oh my goodness!
How many players did they field that, or did they not field the? I kind of have watched a little bit of it. The Steelers Ravens game, that was kind of exciting last night.
Make it to the end.
Oh, that game was super boring until the fourth quarter, and then they scored like 143 points combined and trading off touchdowns and then missed extra points and a missed field goal to put the Steelers in. Aaron Rodgers is in the playoffs as a not Packer. A Steeler. Every time I see him, I can't. I'm like, what? Okay. Yeah, but that's not the important thing that happened over the weekend. I will have you know that I was fully prepared to do a whole show today with all kinds of very interesting stuff that had nothing to do with Venezuela. But then, we invaded is sort of right. I mean, not really. We abducted, arrested, interdicted, the leader of Venezuela who had been indicted here in America on narco-terrorism charges and is going to be in court today in New York City, which is kind of amazing.
It was a force against a heavily fortified military fortress in the heart of Caracas to bring outlaw dictator Nicolas Maduro to justice.
Okay, here we go.
This was one of the most stunning, effective, and powerful displays of American military might and competence in American history.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this was... when you go to invade like an armored fortress with, vast resources, and then you kind of like, hey, anybody here? It was amazing. It reminded me, I know Trump said it, nothing like this has ever happened before. It actually reminded me of the Iran attack. If only because none of us expected this to happen quite this way. I mean, kind of like you knew something was going to happen, but I certainly didn't expect this to happen on, Friday. Or overnight, however you want to describe it. And you kind of like, wow, okay, so this is happening. And the level of coordination of military assets in the United States, CIA, Space Force, all of that stuff. Pretty amazing that we managed to pull this off. And not just that, but against yet another case where you think the adversary is at least moderately capable of something, and it turns out they can barely find their guns in the middle of the night.
All Venezuelan military capacities were rendered powerless as the men and women of our military working with U.S. law enforcement successfully captured Maduro in the dead of night.
Their military was... listen, if you make it sound like the military on their side is incompetent, you wind up, I think, underemphasizing the significance of what our military did. Which I do not want to do because what our military did was amazing. But what I would have expected to have happened would have been less unbalanced. It reminds me of, Iraq 1, shock and awe. It reminds me of the Iran attack. There are incidents where the United States has been involved where you think it's going to be much more of a fight somehow, and then it's just so utterly lopsided that it's interesting, especially as a comparison piece, to when Russia went against Ukraine. And you remember the very beginning of that? You thought that it was going to be over fast, and Russia had so much dominance that, I mean, little old Ukraine, I mean, it's a big country, but, it, you know, that in terms of military power, you thought it was going to be over very quickly. And then all of a sudden, the Russians didn't know how to fuel tanks, and they didn't understand supply lines, and, you know, they were getting stuck on the side of the road. And, you know, the basic operations of ground-based assault logistics, they just couldn't do. And so it all fizzled and then became what we're involved in now with this massive, long, painful war. Well, you know, not that. I mean, just zip-zop, a couple hours, we're in, we're out, we take them, we kill a few people and don't lose anybody and don't lose any equipment. And you know, we even have the apparently the capacity to take out the lights.
It was dark. The lights of Caracas were largely turned off due to a certain expertise that we have. It was dark and it was deadly.
You know, you don't hear Trump internally restrain himself a lot, but he's obviously talking about what at least he believes is some kind of, you know, classified capability. You know, we totally turned their, with a thing power stuff, magic wand that we've got, you know, that I don't want to tell you anything about. And I don't know either. I just thought it was kind of an interesting moment.
These highly trained warriors operating in collaboration with U.S. law enforcement caught them in a very ready position. They were waiting for us. They knew we had many ships out in the sea, just sort of waiting. They knew we were coming. So they were in a ready, what's called a ready position, but they were completely overwhelmed and very quickly incapacitated.
Yeah, and, you know, as you mentioned, we may not ever see the video, no American was killed. And then we get to the stuff that, look, there's a lot of conversation, but you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, you tell the facts first and then you do the analysis second. There's a lot to be said about this, don't worry, and we'll get to it all today, okay? This is essentially the only news in the universe right now, okay? And but we'll talk about it extensively, especially since we care so much as Americans, and we should, but we also care so much because, you know, a lot of the people that were involved in this operation were, I mean, you know, you have Navy and Marine aviator assets, and Hurlburt's right down the way, and Eglin's right down the way. I mean, you know, Northwest Florida was massively connected to this, somewhat through current operations, somewhat, we assume, and somewhat through, you know, just history of who trained here. And so we care a lot about this because, you know, the future of foreign policy, the future of our relationship with Latin America is all involved in this.
We're going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. So we don't want to be involved with having somebody else get in, and we have the same situation that we had for the last long period of years.
All right, so Maduro's out. I mean, since he's here, you know, or at this time he was on his way here, and now he's here. And who's in charge? Well, his vice president has now been sworn in. And so what does that mean? What does it mean that we claim running it? That's a claim that backed off largely. You know, if you just let the power vacuum suck up, you don't get anything better than Maduro in charge. So what exactly is the plan now? He's calling the shots. What are the short-term future options? To which, I think if we're being honest, the administration has not given very good answers yet.
So we are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious.
That, again, does not answer the question. It's very vague.
We want peace, liberty, and justice for the great people of Venezuela. And that includes many from Venezuela that are now living in the United States and want to go back to their country. It's their homeland.
So this is where, to me, you start to get into, I would say, like the third layer of the analysis or the questions here. You know, the question is sort of, what did we do? And to what degree it was justified on its own. You know, the capture, the apprehension, the arrest, as Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, keeps calling it, as a, you know, law enforcement operation. He was indicted in the United States, and, you know, we went and arrested him. We offered him many, many options to do that peacefully. He refused, and we went ahead and took him into custody with a big operation, right? Okay, that's sort of slice one. Slice two is, okay, now what happens in Venezuela? you know, one possibility is that Venezuela goes on the same way it would have gone on if Nicolas Maduro had just died in his sleep. You know, they're without their leader and no difference. I mean, obviously, that's not going to be the case because, you know, we have threatened, implied at least, that, you know, if they don't behave, we'll make another change. You know, that's within our capability. And, oh, by the way, a dictator is elsewhere. We can make a change there, too. We can strike anywhere we want to, anywhere in the world. So you're on notice. And that's kind of the second part, is what's the future of Venezuela? The third part is, well, what about for the people there? And I, frankly, I would assume that the vast majority of Venezuelans are kind of thrilled. I mean, Nicolas Maduro did not win the election that he claimed he won. Everybody knows that. He was not a recognized head of state by anybody but his allies in the, you know, sort of axis of evil world, Russia and Iran and so forth. He was not a legitimate head of state. He stole the election, right? I mean, prohibited one of his opponents from running. He did not disclose any of the data to justify that he won. Nobody believes he's actually the elected head of state. So that makes the legal question of apprehending him interesting, because typically you cannot go arrest other heads of state. There's the sovereignty rule. There's the United Nations prohibition against using force against your sovereign neighbors. But at the same time, a guy who is not actually the elected head and has taken control by power, I mean, that's not an obvious answer. In fact, just for, you know, trivia's sake, this is actually very, I thought this was very interesting. Back when Manuel Noriega was in charge of Panama and, you know, was not actually the title-holding president at the time, but still was in effect in power, and we went and took him. So it's not the first time we've done this, you know, over drugs. But with Noriega, what was interesting is the Justice Department had to write a memo. Legal analysis, you might say an attorney general's or a Department of Justice opinion about the matter. Is it legal to go capture a foreign head of state who's under indictment in the United States for, you know, essentially the same kinds of charges? And the opinion was, yes, that's allowed. You know who wrote that opinion? John, this is your 5 a.m. Trivia question, your quiz.
Boy. I have no clue this morning. None.
Deputy Attorney General at the time, William Barr.
Oh.
Who was the Attorney General under Trump, 45, and who is now one of the, well, if you ask Trump, one of his great enemies. I always thought Bill Barr was quite a capable Attorney General. And he's been kind of talking about this since a little bit. But, yeah, the justification for capturing Noriega is almost certainly going to be a key element in not the trial of Maduro, but the preliminary question of whether it's even legal for us to hold him. Because his lawyers are certainly, if he can get any, because he doesn't have any money, you know, he's going to get like the public defender. He's going to have legal representation. And clearly one of their moves is going to be to try to release him on the grounds that what we did was illegal. But we have this interesting, you know, legal precedent authored by Bill Barr back when, you know, he was the deputy attorney general at the Department of Justice back in the day. So, again, the Venezuelans, you've got to imagine, are thrilled today because their oppressor, their dictator, their torturer, their, you know, communist who had run them into the ground is gone. Of course, you know, his pick deputy is now, or vice president is now in charge. But what does that mean when you're facing the threat of more military action by the United States? You know, as President Trump says, we want liberty. We want justice. We want Venezuela to be a prosperous country. And, you know, we don't want to let any more people just like him come back in. So what are we going to do? Well, we're going to run it until we can make a transition happen. And then you have the oil piece. And I haven't talked about this yet, but obviously the fourth or fifth, I'm not sure where I'm counting on all this, but the fourth or fifth dimension of this is the fact that we have said, or President Trump has said repeatedly, that oil companies, which were not entirely kicked out, they were largely had their stakes taken away, but at least one major oil company has been operating in Venezuela, you know, for decades even. So the infrastructure was allowed to fall into neglect and disrepair, and the oil is not being produced at anywhere near the level it was, you know, back 30 years ago. But the claim is that they were deprived of their rights. Venezuela didn't take their oil. The oil never belongs to the person until you take it out of the ground, but you have your rights of access to it, which were deprived of American companies. So you can have a sort of a language dispute about what we own or what they own or anything. But the oil company is going to go back in there and are going to go in there undercover American military protection, not undercover American military protection. We don't know. But the claim is that they're going to rebuild Venezuela's, you know, oil economy, and we're going to go back to, you know, they're going to go back to really high exports of oil, not, though, to the excess of fuel type countries. So that's kind of like the short version of all this. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot to digest legally. If you want my 15-second analysis, I'll tell you, I don't know exactly. I'm kind of with the folks in Congress who are still waiting to get briefed today, the Gang of Eight, the top four in each party for the House and the Senate Intelligence Committees are, you know, going to get briefed. I want to know more. I think it's murky. You can look at it and say it was legal. It was a violation of international law in the United Nations. You can also look at it as a legal apprehension and we're doing something good in our hemisphere under the Monroe Doctrine, or what Trump called the Donroe Doctrine. Oh, my God. Anyway, it's not an obvious call. I know the, you know, a lot of people are up in arms. This is totally illegal. A lot of, you know, Trump supporters are like, this is totally fine. I think you're both too shallow in your analysis. I think there's a lot of complex stuff here, and it's not obvious. And you know me, if I thought Trump was totally wrong, I would say that. You know me, if I thought Trump was totally right, I would say that. I think it's pretty complicated. And as is not particularly surprising, the pro-Trump people are thinking that there's not even a question here, and the anti-Trump people are thinking there's not even a question here, and I think it's a lot more interesting than that. But we'll talk about it throughout the day. John Pickens has, well, not traffic, no, not in the 5 o'clock hour.
I was like, wait a second. Right. I'm not prepared,
he
sir.
Just has a button he pushes.
Oh, how's that flu, babe? Did you take DayQuil Intense Flu yet?
Nah, I got this. Okay, I don't got this.
You stay on the couch, and I'll grab the DayQuil.
Undo your flu symptoms with DayQuil Intense Flu. DayQuil Intense Flu provides powerful relief of your flu symptoms.
I'm ready for that to-do list.
Wow, you do got this.
DayQuil Intense Flu, the daytime coughing, aching, fever, under your flu medicine. Use as directed, keep out of reach of children.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, our restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity health and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code NEWS. Visit LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You're not to approve of your methods.
Yeah? Well, you're not from Chicago.
Good morning, 528 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. We got Steve Taylor in the newsroom for David Wayne one more day with our headlines. Steve?
Well, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is expected to make his first court appearance in New York today following his capture by the U.S. military over the weekend. President Trump has said the U.S. will effectively run the South American country until such time as power can be successfully transferred. Federal prosecutors are charging Maduro, his wife, and their adult son with drug trafficking. Police activity was reported overnight at Vice President J.D. Vance's home in Cincinnati. Video from the scene showed windows apparently damaged in what may have been an act of vandalism or an attempted break-in. Local police say a suspect is in custody and the Secret Service has not yet commented on it. Well, there is just one Florida team in the NFL playoffs now. The Jacksonville Jaguars are the 3 seed in the AFC, and they'll host the 6-seeded Buffalo Bills next Sunday. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Miami Dolphins missed out on the playoffs. They'll look ahead to the NFL draft, where the Dolphins will have the 11th pick and Tampa Bay will pick number 15. And that's what's happening.
Yeah, the Bucs lost their game and the Panthers to the Panthers, right? The Panthers beat the Bucs and then the Atlanta Falcons lost. Therefore, the Panthers got in, right?
Yeah.
No, no, Atlanta won.
Oh, Atlanta won.
They beat New Orleans.
They beat New Orleans, yeah. so the Panthers got in. And then Atlanta promptly fired everybody.
Yeah. Well, that's why they call it Black Monday today.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's crazy. It really is. So we'll look forward to good football coming up this next weekend. Plus, we got, you know, college football.
Well, no.
I mean, it's got a lot of fun sports coming up. All right. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. So thanks so much for listening on a Monday.
News. I'm CJ Papa. Captured Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro will appear before a federal judge in New York City today.
Maduro is facing four federal counts: narco-terrorism conspiracy, cocaine importation conspiracy, possession of machine guns and destructive devices, and conspiracy to possess machine guns and destructive devices.
Fox's Madeline Rivera reporting. Venezuela swears in Delcy Rodriguez as its interim president. So did President Trump speak with her?
No, I haven't.
He added while speaking with reporters on Air Force One that he chatted with her. He will chat with her at the right time. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz scheduled a press conference for today. Rumors are swirling he will reveal he's not running for re-election. Democrat and Kamala Harris's running mate in 2024, facing massive criticism, President Trump and others, for the alleged billion-dollar Medicaid fraud. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 right now, 52 degrees and partly cloudy. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. Mardi Gras season is officially rolling in Pensacola. On Saturday night, hundreds of crew members gather downtown for the annual blessing of the floats, bringing nearly 40 parade floats to Palafox, Jefferson, and Romana Streets. Crew members say they're excited for another year of good times. Amy Fitzgerald told Channel 3.
I think if you get the crews involved, the crews do a ton of charity work. They network throughout the community. You get the crews involved, the community will come.
But there's one thing that's going to be different this year. The parade routes are shifting. The $10 million Palafox Reimagining project is starting today, so the routes will now start on Garden Street and wrap around Wright Street. Despite the construction, crews say they don't expect it to affect the festivities. Well, Pensacon brings more than just pop culture fans to Pensacola. The annual convention is a major economic driver for the city. Last year, it drew roughly 30,000 people and pumped millions of dollars into local businesses. That includes hotels, restaurants, and shops across Pensacola. Marketing director Julio Diaz says the real magic is the community it creates.
Easily millions of dollars each year. Got to be well over $35 million by this point over the course of the event. And it really is all about the community. That's why we're Pensacon. We're Pensacon because we are Pensacola, and we want to bring people to Pensacola and show people how great Pensacola is.
The popular pop culture convention just announced two guests from Stranger Things are coming to Pensacola. Cara Buono and Randy Havens will be there in February. The event is running February 20th through the 22nd at the Bay Center. Protesters in Pensacola rallied against the U.S. actions in Venezuela amid the U.S. demonstrations. Protesters took to the street of Pensacola on Saturday. They joined thousands across the country voicing their concerns about what they describe as a shocking attack against Venezuela. Unlike other recent protests, this one was at the intersection of Palafox and Garden Streets instead of at the graffiti bridge. Congressman Jimmy Patronis expressed his support for the president's recent actions concerning Venezuela. He says he didn't hear about the operation until Saturday morning.
So, you know, I totally support the actions that the president, the decisions that he's had to make, because ultimately, you know, I'm a dad of two sons, and, you know, drugs are not the family's friend when it comes to developing in young lives. And if this what it takes in order to stop this stuff from destroying our future generations of Americans, you know, the president has my full support.
Let's check the forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be looking at some lovely weather for this Monday. Temperatures around 67 degrees for your high. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 58 degrees. As you head into Tuesday, mostly cloudy skies, high near 72. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 62 degrees. Heading into Wednesday, still keeping that nice forecast around with partly sunny skies, high near 73. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 62. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thanks, Brooke. Right now, 52 degrees in Pensacola. It's 53 in Gulf Breeze and 48 in Milton at 534. Next news is at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Making the wrong choice can be very costly. Choosing the wrong plumbing company can cost you a lot of money.
Hi, I'm Judy Lacey with Barbieri Plumbing, and we've been repairing Pensacola's plumbing problems for over 50 years. We are the local originator of the flat rate pricing system, so you don't have to pay by the hour, and there are no surprises. When you need a plumber, make the right choice and call Barbieri Plumbing. We will make your plumbing great again.
License number RF11067749.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Sunday afternoon, the American Red Cross is offering adult and pediatric CPR classes. Upon completion, participants receive a 2-year certification meeting national requirements. See redcross.org for more. Each January, the Quayside Art Gallery showcases artists who joined the gallery in the previous year. Check out the local talent all month long at the gallery on Zaragoza Street. See quaysidegallery.com for more info. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
Well, life on the farm, I kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy to me can't hack. Early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy.
And I can take you for a ride on my big green tractor. We're just country boys and girls getting down on the farm. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
Goodbye, city life.
Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo-hoo!
Yes, yes, that music can only mean one thing. It is our monthly check-in with Ryan Jenkins, our good friend and the owner of Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida. He helps us understand what farmers go through and think about the things that affect them, because after all, if it weren't for them, we wouldn't have clothes or food. And naked, hungry people is not the America I want to live in. Ryan Jenkins, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning. How are y'all doing?
Oh, man, we're doing great. How did you end the year? You've had the years in the books. How did it end?
It was all right. I think they'll probably let us do it again this year. So that's always a
nice.
That's always a plus. If the bank will let you go one more time, that's our goal every year. Just hope I can pay the bank off and they'll fund me again for next year. That's kind of the life of the farmer. But, no, it's good. Our cotton crop was, I haven't done all the numbers, but, you know, just rough figuring, it's probably the highest yielding crop, cotton crop that I've had, I think.
Ever?
And I can say the same for, I think so.
Wow. Yeah,
if it's not, it would definitely be the second one, but it was a very good cotton year. Peanuts were average to just a little bit above average. Corn was average probably. And then, soybeans were well below average.
Now of course, the price you were getting was one of the challenges, but it sounds like you're telling me you had a pretty good cotton picking year.
It was a pretty good cotton picking year. and it was I don't know if you could go back, and I don't even know if we touched on it, but man, harvest season, the weather was basically perfect. It never rained during harvest season. So it's funny that I forgot who I was talking to the other day, but they realized it. They said, man, y'all never had a break, did you? Said, we thought about y'all. You know, usually during harvest season, you get a rainy day here or there or something
yeah.
that kind of breaks it up, gives you a chance to work on your equipment or take a break or come home early or something. And my goodness, we were pretty solid from August till, you know, December. So it was a good season, though. That when it's like that, usually that helps you have a little bit better crops.
Well, and also
so
that's
every rain event, no matter what the crop is, every rain event hurts your yield and your quality and the amount of money that you make. So
plus, so that's the fun time. I mean, the fun time to be busy is at harvest season, right? That's when it's woohoo, you know, because that's money.
Right. Well, and it is. Not necessarily because it's money. It is my favorite time of the year. I like the stress. I like the having something. Every day, you know, you're going to be on a piece of equipment working versus trying to figure out where I need to go or what I need to do or whatever. That's the one time of the year that's set for you. And if you can be in something, you're in it every single day. So
right.
I really, really enjoy harvest season.
And I will say, as a obviously you and I talk all the time, but as I watch you on Facebook, because you post a lot of photos on Facebook, I think you post the most during harvest or right before. Of course, it makes the, you know, the crops are pretty and you do them at sunrise or sunset. You know, I mean, it's, but you know, how often you post on social media is a reflection of how sort of happy or sad you are. You're very happy at harvest season, which is, you know, because you're doing the thing that you love and you're always taking and sharing with everybody else and eat more cotton and eat more, or drink, you know, buy more cotton and eat more peanuts and all that. The big announcement that came out this week was that the Trump administration put numbers on the tariff subsidy, I guess we're calling this the program that was designed to take some of the money made by tariffs, which have very much hurt farmers, and then to redistribute them to you on the basis of the fact that, well, you know, your crops have suffered. The ones that I saw didn't have to do with you as much. I saw soybeans at $31 an acre. I saw corn at $44 an acre. What did you get any for other? I mean, did cotton come in? Did you get stuff for the, you know, peanuts? Did you get stuff for those, or are they promising to do stuff for those?
We did. They're on the same list. So peanuts, gosh, I can't remember. It was $50-something an acre for peanuts, and cotton was actually the second highest on the list, and it was $117 an acre. And it's just, It goes to show all those prices they basically came up with how much they feel like the tariffs have hurt. Now, it sounds like a lot of money probably to people, but it nowhere near makes you whole. I did some quick math, and it's, you know, it takes a scientist, or I don't even know, a mathematician to figure out all this. It's very complicated, but just doing very rough figures, the amount they are going to give us on our cotton, $117 an acre. If you spread that out over my acres or my average yield, that's only about 10 cents a pound that you would be adding to what you got paid this year. So let me just give you an idea.
Yeah, because like how much do you get normally per acre, or maybe do it as a per pound you get per, cause, you know, because I want to have a better understanding of how much this is helping you.
Well, let me just tell you. Let's just start here.
Okay.
In May of 2022, which I'll give you, this is an anomaly. But still, in May of 2022, cotton was $1.45 a pound. All right. Today, last week, when I sold a bunch of my cotton, I got paid 64 cents a pound.
Oof. Wow. Okay.
So the average price for 2022, in 2022, that you could get for your cotton was about $1.15 a pound. And the average price in 2025 was about 63 cents a pound. And now remember that the input prices during that time period have gone up.
So the cost of making the good that is only making you half as much has also gone. Okay. But 10 cents, I mean, so 10 cents doesn't anywhere get you back to comparable, but it does. I mean, it's a 15 to 20% bump, right?
Well, here's what it's going to do. We've talked about it many times on here. Farmers are leveraged as far as they can be leveraged. They have nothing left in their bank accounts. Every piece of equipment, every piece of land has a note on it or against it. Most farmers are in a real bad situation right now as far as that goes. So it's hard for them. We've talked about how. And that's something else, you know, this time of the year, you're getting your operating loan for, I say next year, but now we are in next year. So for 26, you know, in December and January, that's when people, farmers, start getting their operating note for the following year.
Yeah.
So most of them, with the current prices that we have, the current commodity prices and the current input prices, the numbers will not pencil out on paper. The bank's not going to loan you money when your business plan's already says you're going to be losing money.
Loan us money so we can lose it. Yeah, is not probably what the banker wants to hear. Okay.
Right. So it makes it hard. So them coming out with this announcement, even though they're saying we're not going to get the money till the end of February, this gives them a known deal that the bank can possibly lend money against.
Okay.
Yeah, this makes their cash flow look a little bit better. The cash flow projection look a little bit better. That's what the bank's saying.
Okay.
With this, maybe we can cash flow something.
Were people before this announcement not getting their bank loans or getting terms that were really adverse? And is this making a difference in that?
I think that it will make a difference. I mean, we've had plenty of meetings. These things don't just happen, by the way. I want your people to know, for those of us that are very involved, you know, there have been probably thousands of meetings across the country with politicians to get to this point where they made this announcement last week. Does that make sense? It doesn't just happen. We're always out there lobbying and advocating, trying to get help, trying to let people know, hey, this is a problem. Hey, the American farmer is in trouble. We're not just whining. I mean, we've had equipment manufacturers up there. They really listen to the bankers. We've sent bankers to Washington. All this doesn't just happen. There has been a ton of work that has gone in by so many people to get to this point where they just made this announcement. And this announcement, like we've said, is not going to make us whole. It's not going to fix the problem or anything else. It is a small Band-Aid to help keep things going.
Well, on a year that looked like it was going to be
thankful for it.
Yeah, on a year that looked like it was going to be terrible and turned out to be sort of acceptable. That's a good note,
right?
And as you say, it's not a super fix. But I was kind of talking over you. Go ahead. What was your other thing you were going to say?
No, that was just it. I mean, we're very thankful for it, but we have to continue working, and we've got to come up with a long term solution. The farmer doesn't want money that way. We want money from the crop that we've grown. We put our work and effort into, and we get paid a fair price for it. But some, you know, the deals with other countries are a lot of times out of our control. So we've got to be able to find markets for our products and get paid a reasonable price for them.
Do you feel at this point, based on everything that's happened, do you feel like the Trump administration, Department of Agriculture, everybody involved in this understands the shape of the problem and is working in the right direction, or do you still think there's a lot of room for improvement on that?
I'm kind of in the middle of that. I do believe the people running our country know that agriculture's in a bad place right now. I really do believe that. I do believe it's going to continue to take a lot of work to figure something out to make it where, I mean, you know, sustainability or sustainable is a big buzzword, and it has been the big buzzword for several years now in farming. Sustainability, sustainability, sustainability. Most of that, when people use that word, they're talking about the environment. They've got to realize that sustainability, if there's not a farmer there, sustainability doesn't matter. The farmer's got to be the thing that's sustainable. The practice has to be sustainable. Then we'll work on these other things. So it's a big machine with a whole lot of moving parts.
Right.
And we're all trying to work as hard as we can and do the best we can. But at the end of the day, we have to be able to make enough money to live, you know, to continue going. And that's where a lot of our time and effort's focused, and especially during this time of year, the end of December, January, February, March, lots of trips. You know, we'll be going to Tallahassee, be going to Washington, lots of trips and meeting with politicians and just trying to tell our story and see where we can get help at.
And, you know, I mean, I think the president will understand this best from a national security point of view. We don't want to become a country that is more dependent. I mean, he already understands the importance of that for non-agricultural sectors. And I would like to believe that he's going to grasp this as an agricultural national defense interest because, you know, we don't want to become dependent on anybody else for our food. That's kind of a key area.
Amen.
And cotton is the same thing, you know, for all the things that produces as well. So this is good. I'm glad. I'm glad that this is making a difference, even if it's not a massive difference. It's something, and that they have finally come through in a way that is definitely benefiting our local farmers. Peanuts at 50 and cotton at 117 an acre. That's good news.
Yeah, it's the best news we've had in the agricultural community in quite a while. So great. Everybody's thankful for it.
All right, Ryan, thankful. I gotta ask you a non-farming question before. Actually, you always like to end with a farming fact. Let's do that first. You have a farm fact for us this week or this month?
I do, and I think we've talked about it, but I still think it's important to realize what we do. In the 1970s, one American farmer could feed and clothe about 73 people. Today, one American farmer feeds and clothes about 165 people.
Yeah.
So in 50 years, you know, we've gone from 70 to 165.
Crop yields up and productivity up, you know, across the board, and which has been going on for, you know, more than 100 years. I mean, the amount of farmers in America in the early 1900s was like a third of the population, and it certainly is not today.
And no, now that's less than 2%.
Right. It's crazy. I mean, it's good, but it's crazy. All right. I got to ask. I have to ask your opinion about something, and I know you'll give me an honest opinion because that's who you are. You went to Auburn?
Oh, yeah.
Big Auburn fan.
No, I didn't. I'm an honorary Auburn
fan. Oh, I thought you did. Okay, but you're a big Auburn fan. Okay, fair enough.
No.
You know, I'm an adopted Auburn fan. I've taken them on as my you know, my SEC team. I said something horrible on the radio yesterday. I was talking to my dear friend Mike Wood. Well, he's a police officer, and he is a big Alabama fan.
Yeah.
And it was getting ready for the game last night. And I thought I got kind of overwhelmed in a moment of my adoration of Mike because we are good friends and I like him a lot. And just for him and the moment, I did say the horrible words. The initials are RT, and I said them not sarcastically. I said them sincerely, okay? Did I do wrong?
Probably so. Yeah. I would never have said that. Matter of fact, I sent somebody a text last night. I said, I guess we won't have to hear that for a few months.
All right. Well, you know, sometimes when you're
I probably wouldn't have said that. I'd have probably just said Happy New Year. I wouldn't have went that far.
Fair enough.
Good Lord.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, yeah. Okay. All right. I'll take the reprimand.
I wish you'd have said, are you sitting down before you said all that?
I definitely enjoyed the beatdown they got last night. That's for sure.
That was something else. I wasn't expecting that, to be honest with you.
I'll take the scold. That's why I wanted to ask you because, you know, I just, you know, I'll take correction. I can on occasion.
You know,
Ryan Jenkins.
There's only been one perfect person, Walt Durr.
That's right.
And I don't think they ever said that, so it's okay.
That's my favorite Ryan Jenkins quote ever. There's only ever been one perfect person, and he didn't say Roll Tide. That's fantastic. Oh, I love you, man. All right, hey, Happy New Year. We'll talk to you again in a month. Let me know if anything else changes between now and then, all right?
Y'all too. Thanks for all you do, and I hope everybody has a great and happy and safe New Year.
Absolutely.
I'll see you soon.
War Eagle, sir.
War Eagle.
That's better than the nut buggy. I mean, that's pretty good. 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Do you have questions regarding your plants and landscaping? If so, The Garden Line is for you. I am Mike Wiggins, and every Tuesday morning at 9, we are here for you on News Radio 92.3 to answer your questions. Seasonal changes call for different activities in your lawn and garden, so tune in and text or call with your questions on The Garden Line on Tuesdays at 9 and an encore each Saturday at the same time.
The Garden Line on the Pensacola Expert Panel, Tuesdays at 9 on News Radio 92.3.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services, advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
When I heard I needed a heart transplant, I thought it was game over. All I could think about was the memories that I wouldn't be able to make with my family.
Then an angel entered our lives as an organ donor. Their decision to register as a donor saved my husband's life.
Save lives, say yes. Register today as a donor at DonateLifeFlorida.org.
This message is sponsored by Donate Life Florida and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Oh, you think you could out-clever us French folk with your silly knees bent running about advancing behavior? I'll wave my private parts at your aunties, you cheesy lot of second-hand electric donkey bottom biters!
Tennessee. 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 Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters.
Good morning, 5:56, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Palo Fox, I think, is not yet officially closed, but within about 4 minutes is what the schedule is going to be. So what happens if they close it and there's a car down there?
Well, I was just noticing on the live shot, I saw a
Channel
random
3 was
truck.
Down there, yeah.
Yeah, I saw a random truck just parked there.
Okay, well, that well,
hopefully he moves it.
Yeah, he's going to get moved or towed. Yeah, I mean, that's what they're going to do. So Palo Fox will be unavailable to you for the next several months while they're doing the Reimagine Palo Fox project, of course. Let's see. Steve Taylor is in one final day with Fort David Wayne with our headlines. Steve?
Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is expected to appear in federal court today amid heavy security following his capture by the U.S. military over the weekend. Maduro is being held at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. It's a facility known for housing high-profile prisoners. Arraignment is set for today for three of the four people arrested in connection with an alleged New Year's Eve terrorism plot targeting locations in Southern California. The suspects are each charged with conspiracy and possession of an unregistered destructive device. And there's really a day for everything, you know, and as proof here, today is National Keto Day, National Whipped Cream Day, and yes, there are keto-friendly options. Yes, together.
Okay.
Keto Day and Whipped Cream Day together. What a combination. There are keto-friendly options for that. In addition, it's National Screenwriters Day and National Bird Day. And it's also National, thank God, it's Monday Day.
No.
Really?
No.
Really?
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
I don't get
not
it.
Not doing it.
No.
All right.
That's what's
Steve,
happening.
Thanks so much for the update. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3. Interesting note out of California. You know how last year we discovered suddenly that it was illegal to carry guns openly in the state of Florida? Remember all of the, because you have, right, local guy who decided to go deliberately violate this law, Stan McDaniels, stood on Main Street a couple of years ago, openly carrying. The police came and said, hey, bro. He said, nah, bro. And then basically we got a Supreme Court case. And we're not a Supreme Court
yeah,
case,
bro.
But,
no,
you know,
broke.
Florida case. Anyway, so it's now legal to carry openly in the state of Florida. It took a little bit for that to work its way out. And we're still not done because you've actually got a law filed in order to clarify that the ban on certain places applies also to it's all kinds of carrying. Because right now it only applies. It's kind of weird the way the law is written. You remember how this created some uncertainty that the law says even with your concealed carry permit, you cannot carry a gun, you know, into like a police station, for example. And then when that law was declared unconstitutional, all of a sudden it makes it seem like, well, can you now carry a gun into these prohibited places? Well, generally speaking, you know, law enforcement has said, no, you cannot. But that's been an open legal question. Okay, well, there's been a bill filed to fix that. Meanwhile, in California, they have a ban on open carrying of firearms in counties more populous than 200,000, which I thought was kind of an odd way for them to write their law. But, yeah, I mean, it's California. They write their laws all kinds of weird ways. But the law says you cannot openly carry a gun in any county that has more than 200,000 people in it. Well, U.S. Appeals Court has now a panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which used to be a super liberal court and is not anymore. I think Trump has to get the credit for that, frankly. So good for that. But anyway, they have ruled that the ban on open carry in California is unconstitutional. So now it's legal to open carry in California, pending a potential appeal. But we're kind of headed that way. as a country, I think, because both of these courts have done it on the basis of Supreme Court precedent, basically.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3.